Victoria College is a public, open admission college. Our mission is to provide educational opportunities and services for our students and the communities we serve. For more information, please visit us at www.victoriacollege.com to schedule your tour.
Welcome in to episode 102 of The Grid. I'm Gabe Myers. Alongside me, as usual, is Mike Foreman. And Mike, we have actual football games to talk about.
That's right. Big start to the season last week.
Big start to the season, no doubt. West looked really good in a win. East, some concerns after a season opening loss. Goodness gracious, what did Columbus do to Cuero last week? Edna Industrial down to the wire. Hallettsville comeback win over Shiner. Mike, where do you want to start? I mean, we had about nine game of the weeks last week. Yeah. Where on earth do we even begin?
Well, let's start right here. Let's start with West. You saw the Warriors win their first opening week game since 2018.
They beat Calhoun 21-20. That's the last time West won in week one. Pre-pandemic, we didn't even know what COVID-19 was. It's the last time West won a season opener. But yes, 30-7 over Lockhart. And Mike, the game wasn't even that close. The game West could have easily won this game 52-7. And Lockhart 7 came with the twos in at the very end. So it was, for West, it went about as good as it could go. DJ Martinez was the starter and got all the first team reps at quarterback. That kind of the feeling around the program was that DJ would start. I thought Nolan Boyce, the other guy in this QB equation, I thought he was going to play more, but DJ got into a rhythm early on and, you know, just never made sense to really make a change. And he, you know, his leadership, his experience, he actually started a varsity game back as a sophomore when Camden Reppard gotten hurt. So he has some experience, was a great baseball player for them. 348 yards, two touchdowns through the air. Jarrett Swanson, 10 catches for 196. We've been talking kind of all offseason about Jarrett Swanson having to step up and be the leader of this offense. He showed that he can do that. Tristan Bernard, 141 yards receiving and a touchdown for him as well. He's a guy, he looked really good during 7-on-7. He had a couple moments during the spring game. And you just thought, okay, but they bring back J.D. Kelly. Genesis Jeffries is still there. How will he get, you know, will he kind of get the touches needed to break out? Well, he broke out. He had 130 yards in the first half. So talk about a breakout game for Tristan Bernard right away. But, Mike, it's the defense for West. And this is where we were really curious what I wanted to see. Okay, aesthetically, how does it look? And you could just see – You could see the changes just in formation and how they were lining up. And then, of course, the results picked off three pass. They had three interceptions. The only points were allowed at the very, very end of the game. Jacob Huckabee's defense. Again, Lockhart is not the best offense West will play this year. But Lockhart is not, you know, this is not Corpus Christi Moody. This was not some of those CCISD schools from a year ago where they were just inept offensively and West would compile some numbers against them. Lockhart was a real team, and West had really good results against them in week one defensively. And if you're a Warrior fan, that's really encouraging.
Yeah, now turning over to the east side, things did not go so well for the Titans in their season opener, did they?
No, it could not have gotten off to a worse start for East. Or for those who don't know, this is how the first few minutes of the game went. Mike's already laughing. It is literally a comedy of errors here. I mean, opening drive, Georgetown receives the kickoff, goes down, scores a touchdown. Okay, first score of the game. Kickoff goes off the East return man's chest. Georgetown recovers it. They score again. Two touchdowns. Kickoff lands in between two people. Georgetown recovers another kickoff. Third touchdown for Georgetown before East runs an offensive play. East then successfully fields a kickoff. First offensive play, interception. Interception, and it was a, quarterback was throwing, kind of deep over the middle. Defender was in his lap. Just, tough throw. Sophomore QB, first start. Kaysen Coley did not play last week, and so, that's part of this equation as well. First play, interception, Georgetown scores again. It's 30-0 before – before you even have your popcorn, before you're settled into your seat, East is down 30-0. It ended up being 37-0 in the first quarter. Everything that could go wrong for Victoria East did go wrong. I mean, I talked about it last week where in the scrimmage it was concerning because so many of these things felt structural and procedural. So many of East's issues. I didn't think it was talent. I know they lost quite a bit of talent from last year. But, I mean, with Nigel Prater, Jaden Williams, namely, I mean, they had 9 seniors signed to go and play college football. So, you know, those are 9 really good players you have to go and replace. But the cupboard was not bare at East when Coach Ford took over. And Georgetown is really good. And talking to the West coaching staff this week, when I asked them about, you know, kind of what they thought, they said, well, first, Georgetown is really good. That was the first words out of their mouth. So there is a, you know, and they recognize that at East, everything that could go wrong did go wrong for East. And that's what happened. The one kind of bright spot here, Brayshawn Brown did run for over 120 yards for East last week. And that was, you know, Najerel Prater, Jaden Williams carried so much of that load last year running the football. And I was confident that East had capable ball carriers, like capable athletes heading into the season. It was just, okay, who's going to step up and be that bell cow guy? And Brayshawn Brown, it has, you know, one has earned the right to be that guy for East. And, you know, 126 yards, he had a touchdown on the ground. And he's someone who I think will be, you know, Mike, you just finished up doing the stat leaders right now. And he's someone who I anticipate will probably be near the top of the leaderboard throughout the season. He'll be, you know, probably picking up 100 so yards a week. Maybe, you know, Ford said he needs to be getting 200 a week going forward is what he told me today. But for East, everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and not the start anyone could have imagined to 2024 for the Titans. And all the concerns I had about the scrimmage were realized in the worst possible way.
Yeah, and I think that probably, most likely, except from a teaching point, maybe, this is one of those tapes you just like to throw in the trash and say, hey, we had a terrible night. But at the same time,
I don't think that's the approach they're really taking. Yeah. They went, I mean, talking to them, they've watched it. Oh, they really? Said, this is where we got to get better.
Yeah, well, then that's good because this, I'm sure they're motivated. Because, you know, you get kicked like that, it's not a comforting feeling. And so, you know, and I'm sure that this might be a concern for Wes and the coaches. The kids looked at that score. They saw what happened. They probably watched the tape too. So, you know, they don't want their kids to be overconfident because – how many times have we said this? East and West are going to play each other. They're going to be playing their best.
Yeah, that you see that in every sport. And it's funny you say that because before I even started my interview with Courtney Boyce, the Victoria West head coach, he just the first words out of his mouth were, "They're just going to play great against us now." Like after what happened last week, like they're going to play their best game of the season now against us. And the overconfident thing, I don't think that'll be an issue at West because they lost to East last year. Had West beaten East last year?
Yeah.
No, I think that could be a real cause for concern. But because East won the game and West is a pretty – you know, it's weird because they have so many new pieces, but it actually is a pretty they got a lot of senior leadership on this team. Those seniors were on the field starting playing last year when East beat them. So that's a that's still very much on their minds. And there's also, you know, it's a big game. It's the East-West game. So it is just a big game. And then on the flip side for East, one, get the bad taste out of your mouth. That was, you know, kind of the first thing the players, coaches, that's the first thing they said. Like, we're looking forward to that not being the last time we played football, and we're looking forward to putting something different out there. But I think also from a psychological standpoint, it makes it, it's easier to not dwell on that. Because it's one thing like to learn from the mistakes, but it's another thing to be like, oh my gosh, that was so, so bad. And like you, as a player, you start dwelling on it and you start losing confidence and you start like, can we even win or can we even do this? And I think with the West game coming up, for East one, a lot of these players on the team last year that beat West, so there's a confidence that come with that. And then two, the West game is, even though this is just another non-district game, the West game is, you know, again, rivalry game. So it makes it really easy to move past week one and to go like just straight, like all eyes on the next game because of what the game is, because it's a rivalry game. So I actually think psychologically for both teams, they're benefiting from having this game right now. West not focusing too much on the success and staying grounded. For East, just moving past a disastrous week one and knowing they can flip the narrative of their season with 48 minutes of football on Friday.
Right. And I don't think you can overplay the fact that with Kaysen Coley coming back, it's not just and I don't mean just from a performance standpoint, just from that confidence standpoint. I mean
a leadership standpoint. Yeah, there's a presence about.
He was there last year. They won a playoff game. You know, they have this. I was telling someone today. It kind of reminded me a few years back. When Jonathan Ortega got his first start at quarterback at East, it came against West. He hadn't started the first couple of games. And it was actually kind of funny because I was in Port Lavaca for a game, and West was there scouting it. And all of a sudden I hear one of the West scouts say, "Oh, East would pick this game to put Ortega in," you know, and the East end up winning that game. So, I'd be surprised, let me put it this way, if East performs as poorly as they did last week.
Yeah, there's no official word on Kaysen Coley playing, but
yeah.
I would be shocked if he was not playing. I would be shocked if he's not playing this week. Not just the confidence standpoint, but the leadership of Kaysen Coley. He is, I mean, just kind of the dynamic at East High School. Like, Kaysen Coley is the guy. Like, he's just kind of the guy in that school. He's kind of the alpha, and that's – East has been operating without that. And, again, for Ford being first-year head coach and offensive-minded head coach at that, to have to try to operate without your quarterback, it's far from easy. And I think Coley brings a level of just confidence and and composure is the word I'm looking for there. A level of composure that I think East has been lacking at the position just throughout the preseason. And I don't think this is going to be a really one-sided game. I think this is going to be a very back-and-forth game. And first words out of East's mouth this week is, we want to win the physical battle. We want to be the more physical team, which is how East won the game last year. They came out in the second half and just kept running the football against West, and they ran it all the way to a win. And that's we'll see what the game plan exactly looks like, but I'm excited for this one because there's still just so much unknown about the two teams for West. You know, for West, like, okay, great week one with the defense. Now it's kind of out there on film. The East coaching staff obviously can get a chance to, you know, take their bite at the apple, see how they're going to play against it. And then for East, it's, okay, week one couldn't have gone any worse. There's literally nowhere to go but up, and I think you're going to get – you know, it's the wounded animal mode is what some people call it when you get a team after a really bad performance. I think you're going to see a level of desperation from East that you probably won't get again this season. So, again, in a fun, emotionally charged game so early in the season, what more can we really ask for?
Yeah, it's different. There's no question. First time these two teams aren't in the same district. So, it'll be a little different, but, you know, when a rivalry is a rivalry, and it should be a good game.
Yeah, so that's one we're looking forward to. Mike, you were out at Cuero in Columbus last week, and I think everyone in the area and really in the entire state had their eyes open by that final score line, thinking, oh my gosh, how good is Columbus? So, Mike, How good is Columbus?
Columbus, to me, is a team that can win a state championship. They have some things to fix. They're going to have to play a little better on defense to win a state championship. But offensively, they are very, very good. I mean, everything you heard about Adam Schoble is accurate. The kid is drops back. He puts the ball in the right place. He very rarely makes a bad decision. And he even a couple of times, he doesn't do it very often, but a couple of times he took off running when he didn't have a receiver. So I have nothing but good things to say about him. And their receivers are very good. Their offensive line did a good job of protecting him because he was rarely pressured. And the new running back, the running back Rigdon, yeah, from six-man, he's pretty quick. And like I was telling someone, he had over 200 yards, but Quero didn't exactly put on a very good display of tackling. And I'm curious to see how he fares against defenses that tackle better. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from him, but yeah, that's I think still to be kind of decided.
Well, he's going to benefit this season too from playing with Schoble and those receivers. So like he's almost secondary as far as what you're. I mean, he is secondary as far as what you're worried about because Columbus's passing attack is so good. So he's going to benefit from that. But let's move over to Quero because they are the team in our area, and no, I mean again. No one was going to be shocked if Columbus went and won this game. They were the favorites heading into it, but 62 points on the board, or was it 65?
What? 65.
65 points on the board. Columbus never faced a third down.
No.
Not much less a fourth down, a third down. So you talk about a stat.
I know. It was brutal. And boy, they have a lot of things to fix.
Yeah. Where do you start with that?
For me, you start with tackling. That's where you start with. I mean, you just got to go through the fundamentals again and work on that, which I assume that's what they worked on this week, is a lot of tackling.
Because their non-district schedule doesn't really get any easier.
They play Lavernia this week, which I believe hung about 60 points on someone. Now, obviously, not as good as Columbus, I don't think. But yeah, so they need to practice there. The other, they just, a lot of those players just need experience. I mean, and this will be a wake-up call, obviously. So offensively, they showed some promise. I thought Jackson Marie threw for over 200 yards. He did a good job the best he could. They've got some receivers that can catch a ball. I'm a little concerned about the running back position. They said, they're going by kind of committee, but no one really stood out. They had some guys that made some yardage, but they're going to have to do a better job of running the ball because if Marie gets in that situation, which is he was kind of in last week where he has to throw every down almost, that's not going to work out.
Yeah, Quero, again, we talked about it last week where we think a little bit like Shiner last year where it could be rough early on and we'll see this team kind of week 7, week 8 start rounding into form. Mike, next thing I want to hit on is Calhoun and Yoakum because that's one that was a shocker for me. I thought Calhoun was a team getting ready to start fast. And again, Yoakum losing Zachary Taylor and, you know, obviously they're in a really tough district. It's like, okay, how good are they going to be? Is this maybe a rebuilding year for the Bulldogs? Nope, went in and whoop Calhoun, beat them by multiple scores, 41-32 to final over there. You went out to Yoakum on Labor Day because, of course, Mike Foreman labors on Labor Day. What'd you learn about the Bulldogs this week, Mike?
What I learned is a couple of things. One is Bo Robinson is really happy with his offensive line, and it's a young line. But he says right now they're good, but he says they have a chance to be very, very good, as good as some of the teams back when they were making deep runs.
Well, in that district with Columbus and with Hitchcock, having a good offensive line is really important. Yeah. And then they got a guy named Trey Cuellar who can do some things with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, they actually have two quarterbacks. Trey's more of their running quarterback, although he can throw. He ran for five touchdowns. But the thing is, too, and this was kind of funny to me, Bo was saying, you know, he played at UT. Yeah. And he played back when Oklahoma ran the wishbone. Yeah. So Bo has seen option. And he says, I know how to defend the option, you know, which kind of gives – and he says, I've got some coaches who are old enough. Yeah. So that kind of gives them a leg up when they play Calhoun because they know how to defend the option. They've had experience with it. So even though Calhoun scored 32 points, and they did play, they still played without Derek Salinas.
Yeah.
So that hurt them, I'm sure. But
hurt them defensively, too.
Yeah. So, but I think Yoakum has a chance to be pretty good. The question is, will it be good enough in that district?
Well, and that, I mean, when you have to play Columbus and Hitchcock and, of course, Hallettsville as well, that's, I mean, that's really, really tough. But, again, I think Hallettsville's leaning into the offensive line of, okay, we want to play a little bit of keep away. And Bo Robinson, kind of without saying it, that's what he told you, is, hey, we're going to lean on that offensive line this year. And, you know, Bo's smart enough to know, let's keep the ball away from Lloyd Jones and Adam Schoenfeld.
Yeah, but I will say this, they have some skill because, you know, don't forget.
Barnett is.
And, yeah, and don't forget, they won the sprint relay and they came in second in the 4x2 at the state meet. And some of those guys graduated, but they have other guys. So they're not without skill. I think it's just a matter of them getting reps. Yeah. You know, but I think Yoakum has a chance to have a pretty good year.
Yeah, and that was one for me that was an eye-opener because, I mean, you went out to Calhoun and saw him and you know, throughout the practice, and I saw him scrimmage against Hitchcock, and I was just blown away at how kind of far along they were given just some of the guys they were replacing, but knowing also, you know, Alex Parker, a three-year starter, a quarterback, and they had some athletes, and that's one that kind of blew me away. One that was – just you look at the scoreline and it's like, wow, was Edna Industrial 38-35 in overtime over there. You got a chance to go out to Edna this week. They're playing Bay City. And is this just a case of like, well, it's another wild card Edna team?
You know, it's funny, like, because Jimmy Mitchell brought that up when I went out there. He brought it up. I didn't really bring it up. He said, look, I don't want to go through another season like last season where we go out one week and be really good and the next week we wouldn't know. He said, he said the coaches have talked to the kids about that, about maintaining focus. But, it's a county rivalry. And I'm sure Industrial is getting tired of hearing about Edna, you know, all summer long. Edna's ranked, Edna this, Edna that. Industrial lost its quarterback, blah, blah, blah. They were tired of that. And they went out with, you know, intent. And even Coach Mitchell said they played very hard, which has kind of been a characteristic of all Industrial teams. And they were able to, you know, to push Edna. And, of course, I talked about this this week. Edna had over 100 yards in penalties. And you do that, you're going to struggle against anyone.
That is. And now Edna plays Bay City this week. And Bay City, let's start Zylan Williams, four tough this week.
Yeah, I was amazed when I looked at his stats and I kind of went, what? You know, it was like, he did this and this and this. And then when I spoke to Coach Robert Jones, I was like, yeah, he goes, we needed that because we only had 31 snaps. And I was thinking, wow, you scored 62 points with 31 snaps. That's pretty impressive.
2 points a play. Yeah. I think Jones will take that going forward.
I imagine, yeah. But that was pretty impressive. He said they've got to eliminate penalties as well. And some of the mistakes they made on defense, because Sweeney had a lot of rushing yards. So it's going to be interesting because you have Braylon Harris from Edna and Zylan Williams and, of course, Johnny Andrews, you know, we didn't even mention.
The firepower on the field.
Yeah, I mean, you've got athletes in this game coming up. So, and it's really come down the last couple of years, it's the margin has been 7 points or less, and it's come down to mistakes. And I think really it will be, again, whoever makes the least mistakes.
The thing I worry about this, I mean, again, the last, you know, last year, Edna won a close game. And, of course, Bay City had Carlon Jones. But Edna did have Jaden Clay, who was a four-year starter, had seen it all at quarterback. And now it's Bay City who's got that experienced quarterback with Alex Estrada. And you mentioned Zylan Williams earlier and all he did last week. Jahdae Andrews is going to be fresh coming into this one, I think, in a matchup with Edna. Last time playing Edna, hasn't beaten Edna in his career. And then, you know, knowing how good Braylon Harris is and all the accolades he gets, and, you know, deservingly so, I'm kind of expecting Jahdae Andrews to have a little bit of a statement game this week.
Yeah, I am sure he's thinking about that because, especially, you know, he came on so much last year. He's really learned how to take advantage of his size. You know, he gets behind those offensive linemen. He's not easy to see. And he's learned now to how to run behind his line and pick his holes.
Yeah, that's the game you'll be at this week. I'm really excited to see kind of how that one plays out. Another outstanding game in the area this week is Goliad and Tidehaven. And Goliad, I mean, East Bernard kind of took it to him last week. So this is a little bit of, you know, wounded animal bounce back spot as well for the Tigers right here. A team that I think offensively is still learning a little bit about itself.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think this is, and you know, Tidehaven's looking at this game saying, hey, East Bernard beat them. And, yeah, you know, East Bernard's in Tidehaven's district. So they're going to have a kind of a measuring stick on this
and
thing.
And Industrial just went and played Edna into overtime. So I think Tidehaven's looking around his district right now thinking, okay, this is.
Yeah, but I think what you said is true. I really think Goliad is trying to find its identity on offense. And I think that until they do that, and I don't know what's going to happen there. You know, who knows? Maybe they'll go back to the slot T after all is said and done, you know, because they were able to utilize that last year. So I know they want to take advantage of their athletes, which I understand. You know, you have Lamont Franklin, Donovan Perry, you know, you've got athletes. And but at the same time, you still have to be efficient.
Yeah, you still got to be efficient over there. Another game, kind of interesting one on the docket here is I just had it a second ago. Well, I had it a second ago, but this is a different one. Yoakum and Industrial here, because that's it. I think both of those teams are ones that we touched on a minute ago as kind of maybe exceeding expectations in week one.
Yeah, I think they both we'll see if Industrial can match up against Yoakum's offensive line. I think that'll be a big twist.
I mean, Edna's not short on the offensive line themselves.
And
so
I'm curious to see, too, how Industrial, if it's able to control the ball against them. They had a lot of rushing yards against Edna, and I'm sure that's kind of what they'll try to do against Yoakum.
And then also Shiner Rice Consolidated. Yeah. That's what Shiner was up 15-0 against Hallettsville. Hallettsville ends up winning 22-15. A little bit of heartbreak over in Comanche Land over there. Rice Consolidated, you've been talking about in this offseason the team that could surprise some people, and I think for Shiner, this is probably a little emotionally wounded coming into this week. They have to recover pretty quickly.
Yeah, Shiner. Yeah, they took it on the chin from Hallettsville after having an early lead, like you said. Rice, I said before, they are loaded with skill position players. And those guys are explosive, and, you know, they could rack up some points. We'll see. This will be a good test for the Shiner defense. I want to see. One thing that I was told about Shiner is it's still not very big. You know,
they're bigger than they were last year, but still not big.
So, you know, and I mean, so we'll see. I mean, Shiner, I still think Shiner's going to be very good by the end of the year. But
when you got to remember, they've dropped down to 2AD too. Yeah. So it's not Refugio and Ganado you're competing with anymore.
No. So I really think they'll be good at the end of the year. And, you know, it's just a matter of them kind of getting it together.
Yeah, that's one I think to kind of watch for there. This is, I mean, again, Week one was such an insane, like, we had so many good games all over the place there. Is there, I mean, obviously you're at Bay City and Edna, and I think if I was in your position, that's one I'd be at too. What's the next game you look at and think, man, I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes?
I'm curious about London and Refurio, to tell you the truth.
Well, London, the Goliad, Edna, they were telling Jimmy Mitchell and Kevin Salazar were telling me that they think London's a problem, and they got some athletes over there.
Well, the thing about London is I do not understand how it is still a 3A school. I mean, they have numbers out the kazoo out there. In fact, I was told that someone told me they think in the next realignment London will jump all the way to 5A.
Oh, wow.
Because they have gotten an influx of people. Now, a lot of them may come in after realignment. But that gives them a numbers advantage on Refurio, which has always had a lot of players going both ways. But in the past, Refurio has not had problem with London. So I don't know if it's their speed or what it is that they take advantage of. But I'm real curious because I think London and Edna could, depending on how good the private school that Refurio plays is, those could be their toughest tests, you know, until they get to the playoffs.
And that, London's also, I think, just hearing what I hear about them, it could be a little bit of a Ganado preparation in the sense of, okay, this is a team that's going to try to leverage its athleticism, a lot of skill, going to spread the ball around. Well, there aren't a ton of 2A teams that do that, but London's a team that's going to go and try to do that a little bit. So, again, Refurio, just getting the reps in of playing a team that's going to try to spread you out and take advantage in space.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I think we'll get a little better handle on Refurio after this week. Also, El Campo, you know, they had a big win over Wharton, which was expected. Yeah. But they traveled to Bryan to play Rutter. Yeah. That's going to be a test for the Rice Birds. I think Travis Reed feels like the Rice Birds are in a lot better shape this year than they were last year. But I think they're still kind of in a growing situation. And you know, this will be a really good test for them because Rutter started out with a win over West Fork. And, to go on the road to Bryan like that is going to be a challenge.
Well, and in El Campo, too, I think another one of these teams that at the end of the year is going to be different than what they are at the beginning of the year. Still a young, again, the knowledge of the scheme and just the understanding of what Coach Reeve wants to do. The importance of that can't really be understated. I think El Campo has a much better handle on what its identity is going to be in 2024, but this is still a very young team. Just still, I think in a lot of ways, you have a lot of guys that just need the varsity reps right now.
Yeah, and then also we probably should mention Ganado will be at home against Bowling. And Ganado got a test from Van Bleck. Corey Austin ran for over 200 yards. Of course, they didn't have Bryce Ullman, and they didn't throw the ball a whole lot. Yeah. Vince Saboteur had a lot of yards in that game.
And he was the guy that when I saw him during camp, it's like, okay, that's not that he's going to replace Dylan Holt, but kind of the element Holt brought to the offense, they're going to try to recreate it with him.
Yeah, and Bowling beat Weimer in week one. Yeah. So I'm curious, you know, this we'll see. I don't know what Bryce's Ullman status is this week. It sounds like to me they're protecting him, you know, because they obviously need him for district and in the playoffs.
Yeah, Ganado's biggest games are very much ahead of it. I'm curious to see because they play Tidehaven in a couple of weeks. Yeah. That's one I hope just as a fan, I guess that's one I hope he plays in just because it's, you know, that Tidehaven defense against Ganado's offense. You kind of want all the stars out there on the field, so. You know, we hope to see Bryce Ullman out on the football field there very soon. But, Mike, week two, we got East and West, Bay City, Edna, a ton of good games across the area. So should be a ton of fun in week two. And looks like we might be even expanding our coverage a little bit for some of these games. We had a new editor hired here who loves him some football. So Sean, we're excited to go and put you to work later this year.
And before we go, I want you to just mention a little bit about the goalie.
Well, yeah, I was going to talk about volleyball.
Man, they put it on West last night. I wasn't surprised that they won so much, but the way they won, that's what shocked
me. So volleyball. So let's start here. We have some really good teams in the area for volleyball right now. The latest Texas Girls Coach Association poll came out yesterday. Goliad's ranked number 1 in 3A. Calhoun is ranked number 3 in 4A. Beeville, who we haven't got to see yet, is ranked number 2 in 4A. So some really good 4A. And that's not even mentioning Cuero with Arisa Carbonaro, who's arguably the best player in the area. In 2A, Fall City's in the top 10. Schulenburg, 16. And Flatonia, shout out Flatonia, they're ranked number 20. They find their way into the rankings. Summer Sodek, great on the basketball court, as we know. Looking at just box score scouting, an absolute menace on the volleyball court as well. Then I don't think that really shocks people, because good athletes are good athletes are good athletes. Victoria West, 12th this week in the 5A poll, and West has been off to an incredible start this year. They were 23-3 heading into last night's game against Goliad, who was 3A number 1. So Goliad over the weekend hosted its own tournament. They got to the championship game because that's what Goliad does. They play volleyball games and they win volleyball games. Goliad got kind of hammered by Calhoun in its home tournament championship game. Out in Goliad Saturday afternoon, Calhoun beat them. And, you know, these tournament matches, they're just, you know, it's best of three, not best of five. But it was 25-20, 25-16, which you don't see Goliad on the receiving end of those games very often. And talking to Coach Jess Odom after the game, she had said that there was a little bit of like a kumbaya come to Jesus moment with this team after that, which is crazy because Mike Goliad is 23-3 this season. The sky is far. They were ranked number 1 before this West game even happened. They were ranked number 1 in 3A. The sky is not falling. Calhoun's ranked number 3 in 4A. So it's not like they went and lost to a bad team or lost to someone like we should never lose to them. Calhoun's really good. But the way they described it, it was like Goliad was really serious coming in, and you could see early on there was an extra gear Goliad had hit. There was a lot of emotion, not just from the players, but every point head coach Jess Odom had these kind of outsized reactions. She's usually really calm on the sideline and very just, you know, she very strategic as a coach. So she's very much consumed with, okay, what can I do positioning? What can I do with the rotation? How can I, you know, what insight can I give the girls? It's usually more like that. She was just outwardly emotional throughout the game, and the team really took on that personality and just put it on Victoria West. A straight set win, 3-0, 25-20, 25-22, 25-11 over a Victoria West team that's been outstanding this season. And so, a few takeaways from that game last night. Number one, Isabel Sanchez is the best setter in the area. And end of sentence. And it's not just, I mean, her numbers are her numbers. Goliad scores a lot, so she gets a lot of assists. Okay. Her hitters are just running through the ball every time. Everything is on a tee. Everything is perfect. They are able to put the ball down hard and fast. And it's, again, I thought there was someone I was talking to during the game who said it best, where it's the Goliad hitters are literally just running through the ball. Like, they're not having to back up to it. They're not having to wait for it. They're able to just, the way you want a baseball player, the bat just going right, you know, just going right through the zone. That's these Goliad hitters' right arms as they're hitting the ball. It's going right through. It's perfect, perfect every single time. The second thing, I said last week that Wes Emily Parker is the best middle blocker in the area. And she's on the short list. But last night, Addison Yendre of Goliad, she is just a shadow of the other team's hitter. Addison Yendre is 5'11", so she's tall, but not just some kind of wall or not just like overwhelmingly tall. She's 5'11", but her positioning on the court, she is just, again, just a shadow of wherever the other hitters are. So those are kind of two of my big takeaways. And the other one, we talked about with Wes last week. When I saw Wes against St. Joseph, I thought Wes could turn it up to this gear against St. Joseph where it's, okay, ball's not hitting the ground, and they could just go and do that. The thing is, Goliad has that gear as well, and we knew that. And there were it was awesome watching last night, especially in the first two sets, because you would see both teams get into that mode, and you'd have these long, extended rallies where the ball is just not hitting the ground, so it's going back and forth, and you think, oh, that ball, like, that should be a kill. Nope, someone's digging it out, and it's a lot of fun. But Goliad just had a little bit more to him in those exchanges in Weston. I mean, I don't know how many of those exchanges Goliad won last night, but I feel like every extended series of play, Goliad was coming out on top of. And I think Wes in the third set, it was 25-11. I think Wes was just a little shell-shocked and kind of had their back broken a little bit by some of these long Goliad rallies. So I could not be more impressed with the Tigerettes. And this looks like a team that they've been three straight years, Columbus regional semifinals. That's where the season has ended. This looks like a team determined to finish the job this year. And it's not just beating Columbus and winning the regional tournament. It's winning the state tournament. And again, we'll have to see what some of the other 3A teams look like. But this is a Goliad team that has the look of a potential champion.
Yeah, so we do definitely have some good teams around this area in volleyball, so that's encouraging.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. West actually plays Calhoun on Friday, and that's one where I wish it was on a Tuesday so we could go out to it. Because, again, and I'm curious for West, because Goliad played Calhoun, hated his performance, and, you know, came back and played hair on fire, their best game imaginable against West on Tuesday. Garrett Gomez is looking for a similar response from his team. He told me after the game, look, this is a wake-up call. I think it's a good wake-up call, but West had been playing so well throughout the season, even in their losses. They lost to San Antonio Davenport, who's a defending champion in 4A and probably the favorite to repeat down over there. They lost to Waller, who's a team ranked in the top 10 in 5A, and a very competitive game to Waller at that. So West's losses have not been, you know, they've not been bad losses. This was not that losing a Goliad is a bad thing, but kind of the way it happened, it was, okay, a little bit of a wake-up call here, and now you get to go and play Calhoun, who has beaten Goliad twice this season. And I think for West, it is not that, like, this game against Calhoun's a must-win or anything like that, but the performance needs to be better. There needs to be, okay, this is kind of the first real adversity West has faced this season. How do they handle that? Because from what it sounds like, the district they're going into is not going to provide them with a ton of adversity. So this is, you know, some lessons you need to learn before the postseason begins, where West fully intends to be and have an extended stay in. So need to see how West, you know, how West handles some of this adversity. I thought, you know, for as great as Isabel Sanchez was last night, I thought West's setting could have been a little bit better. I thought they, you know, thought their hitters were backing up to the ball a little bit too much. And then also the hitters, just even when they were getting the right sets, they didn't have that great of a night. Again, I think some of that was Addison Yendre, you know, blocking at the top. I think some of that was Goliad and Carolyn Youngblood's an outstanding libero herself. And Goliad's back row is just really, really, Goliad's everything is just really, really good. So again, and Calhoun is a team kind of similarly built to Goliad. I don't think they have a middle blocker as good as Addison Yendre, but Nevaeh Ronhell is a better hitter than anyone Goliad has as an outside hitter. Kendall Vargas is another, her, Jasmine Valenzuela of West on the short list of best liberos in the area, along with Carolyn Youngblood from Goliad. So this is a, you know, kind of a bounce back spot for West here of, can they rise to the challenge the way Goliad did this week? Because I think again, every team, you know, volleyball, because you play so many games, no one's really going to go undefeated in volleyball, so you're gonna have to learn to overcome some losses, and Goliad showed it could do that. Now it's West's turn to go and do the same thing against what, to this point in the year, I mean, Calhoun is 2-1 against Goliad this year, so I think it's fair to call Calhoun the best team in the area right now.
Well, we'll see what happens with West and Calhoun on Friday. That'll be interesting.
And then also got to put in there, East and St. Joe played last night as well. I hate that I couldn't be at that one as well, because Addison Ozuna against her former team, and boy, did she show up. 30 kills. East wins 3-1, and that's a good win for East. I watched St. Joseph last week, and I thought St. Joseph was a formidable team. They had some real height on the front line, and again, a team where they have some players just in some bigger roles that are growing into them a little bit, but it's a team that I think is on the rise a little bit. And East lost the first set, but then came back and won the next three. And I want to pull up the stats for Addison Ozuna because she was just an absolute menace last night. 30 kills and 15 digs for Ozuna last night. And she is just, again, the last 2 years she's been our all-area player of the year for volleyball. And, I mean, just last year for St. Joseph, she had to spend some time as a setter as well. She was playing in the back row while also having over 500 kills on the season. East this year, a little bit more, she just to be a pure hitter, which from talking to other coaches in the area, that role suits her more. St. Joseph, they had to do that with her out of necessity because they had a setter transfer out, and then they had their setter get hurt. So she had to do everything just because she could. But East is using her just more as a pure hitter. And again, 30 kills last night. And, you know, people who are at that one is like, you kind of saw, I think it was the first time for East volleyball fans, and maybe even within the East program, where they got to see the best version of Addison Ozuna. So that, again, East, a really young team. I think that win for them last night, really, really, really big for them, just in the confidence of, okay, like, I think it's maybe starting to come around for them. And, you know, district play is only a few weeks away, so this is a good time to really start finding your stride.
Yeah, we'll see. It's coming up. So we got a lot of big football games and some big volleyball games, too. So busy time of the year.
Busy time of the year for us. Mike, prediction on East-West. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to.
I predict they'll play.
I'll predict they'll play.
Yeah, but I, those games are really difficult to pick because.
Along those same lines, Voice had goes, kind of key, like, what has to happen for y'all to win? He says, we have to be leading at the end of the game.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, that makes sense. I think West, the key for West, obviously, is to continue what they did last week. The key for East is they've got to execute. Yeah. And, we'll see if Case and Coley coming back is enough for them to kind of eliminate those mistakes.
Well, this is what I'll say for West. So I think last week they did have a fumble. Genesis Jeffries fumbled a ball in the red zone, and that kind of took a touchdown off the board for them. But this was part of the reason why West's quarterback battle extended as long as it did, was because DJ Martinez, he's got a gun for an arm. Like he can absolutely, and we saw it in baseball. He was one of the best pitchers in the area, and it translates to the football field. He's got a cannon attached to his right shoulder. But when you have a strong arm, you want to, a lot of times you can make some throws you probably shouldn't make. And part of the issue with DJ throughout the spring and the summer and in the preseason was he puts the ball in harm's way sometimes. And that's part of why this quarterback battle extended. He had no turnovers against Lockhart, but there were a couple of turnover-worthy throws, or just a couple of throws that it's like, okay, do you really need to go for that? And I get it, if I had someone as fast as Jarrett Swanson running a post route, I probably want to get it out there to him as well. But it does become East this week. I anticipate they are going to be better defensively, or at the very least just more prepared for West offense than what Lockhart was. DJ Martinez needs to keep the ball out of harm's way. If he does that, because his arm is so strong and West receivers, Bernard and Swanson, are so good with the ball in their hands, they're going to make plays. They're going to rack up yards through the air just because of the way that offense works and the talent they have on the outside. Keep the ball out of harm's way for Victoria West. That's my number one thing I want to see from them. Limit the turnover. Then for East, can they, after last week was so bad, the scrimmage was so bad, start the game, start off the game positive? Can they go down first drive and score? Can it be 7-7 or 7-0 at the end of the first quarter and kind of start building that positive momentum? Because with how the scrimmage went and how the first game went, if East is behind 14-0 right away, just a bunch of teenage kids, can they kind of recover from that? So for East, I think it's just start fast, and then you start growing into the game. You build on what you're doing. You trust your game plan, and things start really rolling. For West, keep the ball out of harm's way. DJ Martinez is a gun for an arm. The big plays are going to come. Can they... Can they keep the ball out of harm's way? Can he be patient and take what the defense gives him? I thought he did a good job of that for the most part against Lockhart. This is the East-West game. You're probably going to, you know, East beat them last year. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they got a shot play in the playbook early on. Tristan Bernard or Jarrett Swanson is going to be running down the field, and DJ's going to want to throw the ball. If he's open, great. If not, find something else. DJ also ran for a touchdown this week or last week. Don't turn the ball over for East. Start fast. That's kind of my – for each team, kind of my keys to the game this week.
Yeah, and I think also for East, I have to point out they have one more non-district game left. So yeah. They need to get it together because, as we know, their district is not going to be easy.
In the non-district games, it's Gregory Portland, who's a really good team as well. So this is not like – I mean, West made the third round last year, so they're a really good team. But this isn't a thing of like, okay, well, if East doesn't perform well this week, they get a tune-up game next week. Like, no, there's no – East has – of East 10 games this year, 9 of them are against playoff teams. There's no tune-up games. Yeah. There's no, like, get-right games. Every week it's a real team who presents a real threat.
Yeah. So, well, I'm sure Memorial Stadium will be crowded out there, and Gabe will be out there. And follow him on Twitter if you can't make it out. He'll keep you updated.
I think I do a good job with my updates. I think I do a pretty good job with those.
Yeah, he'll keep you updated, so follow along with that. And we'll be back next week, won't we, Gabe?
Yeah, we will be back next week. We keep saying we're going to go on video for the podcast. It does look like next week we're finally actually going to be able to get that going. We're having a lot of changes happening within the Advocate internally. It's internal, not really so much external right now, but we, you know, kind of rebuilding some things inside. But we're excited to put a video product out there for you at some point in the near future. But we appreciate you guys for tuning in and following along with us. But episode 102 in the books, East versus West this week, the battle for the boot. Mike will be at Bay City and Edna. That'll be a really fun one out over there as well. For Mike Foreman, I'm Gabe Myers. We appreciate you tuning in, and we can't wait to be back with you here next week.